Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 364, recorded on March 3rd, 2019. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This episode is sponsored by SimpliSafe at simplisafe.com/TIOSS. Check them out. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from Smile. How's it going, Jeff?
It's going great. And did I detect the hesitation while you were deciding what to say?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Neither do I. I have no idea at all.
It's so hard.
Good save.
So hard.
No one caught it.
Yeah. And Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam. How you doing?
Hey, yeah. I haven't changed careers.
So you're just...
Still from the same place.
Yeah, good.
And welcome to canceled episode, six? I don't know what this is.
This is... it might be getting up there into the double digits now.
Would it be too spoilery to compare this to that one scene near the end of Deadpool 2?
I have not seen either movie, so I don't care.
All right. Well, for those of you that have seen Deadpool 2, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
All right. Good memes. So, Apple stuff. Apple Watch sales, turns out, comprise half of the smartwatch market. In 2018.
What's the rest of the smartwatch market?
Fitbit and Samsung, various Samsung.
Oh, does
things.
Fitbit actually have a watch now? Like thing that actually qualifies as a watch?
Yeah, kind of.
I think it depends on the model you look at. And I would imagine...
Samsung still making like a gear thing or something like that?
Yeah. So it's Apple, Fitbit, Samsung, then Garmin.
That's right. Garmin has some Q4, actually pretty nice watches from what I've heard.
Q4 2018. Oh, wait. See, I thought it was Samsung was in second, but it looks like, oh, yeah. I don't know why it's written ordered this way. Yeah. So Samsung is number two at 2.4 million in Q4 2018. However, it looks like, yeah, Fitbit is selling just a little bit better overall.
I'm surprised Garmin's not up there more. I know a lot of people.
Yeah, no,
really,
they are up there. So there's 3.2 million sold in 2018, which, you know,
I figured they'd be higher than Samsung.
Yeah, a lot of people like them because they have the built-in GPS.
That's what I hear. Yeah,
although maybe Garmin has that by now too, or I mean Samsung. Sorry, excuse me.
Well, Apple does, obviously.
So. Yeah, well, I mean, if Apple has it, so then there's likely.
I have not kept, Samsung knows how to do it.
You guys can now tell. I have not kept up to date with my Samsung smartwatch news.
That's so weird.
I have no idea what they're doing.
I'll get you up to speed. They're still making watches. They're still big and clunky. And people buy them because you can't use Apple Watch with a Galaxy phone.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
I don't think they're still big and clunky. They look decent.
They're still big and clunky. I mean, they make some watches that do look decent, but they're still big and clunky.
Well, Apple hasn't changed their design really either, right?
I mean, they're kind of...
I mean, if we're being fair.
Right, but Apple isn't making a watch that looks clunky.
I don't think it looks clunky. I'm looking at the Galaxy Watch.
And they make a smaller size. Everyone else seems to forget that at least part of the human population has a smaller wrist.
I wouldn't say clunky. I'm going to say chunky.
Okay, chunky. I'll go with chunky.
I think that'll stop the emails, but send them all to Jeff anyway.
Right. Who makes my email address is michael@tios.com.
Yeah.
Do they have like multiple? Does Samsung have, no? Samsung just does the round ones now, right? They don't.
I think so.
Just somebody does a square one that I seem to see more frequently. Like I never see a Samsung one. I always see who makes the more squarish one?
Apple?
No, not like square. Like the band is the same width. Is that the Fitbit one?
I maybe. I'm doing a really awesome Google search.
Like
right
the
now.
Band actually just like blends right into the. Yeah, it is the Fitbit one.
Fitbit Ionic.
Ionic. That's the one. That's the other one that I see everywhere. So that's probably right.
I mean, to be fair, I feel like I would kind of like a circular Apple Watch.
Apple would have to come up with a clever way to update the Apple Watch interface.
I mean, last I checked, aren't they the most valued company in the world?
Yes.
They have the most money or something like that. I think they could maybe manage that.
You would think,
Jeff.
And yet here we are.
Yeah.
Actually, this Fitbit Ionic is pretty nice looking.
Ooh, let's look at Fitbit. Fitbit.
And it's got GPS, multi-day battery life, heart rate, does music, built-in GPS.
This thing is ugly, but...
269. The little squarish one?
Yeah.
Look how thin it is.
It's thin.
Oh, I guess it's...
Oh. What? It's what?
It looks thin until you look at the giant chunk of plastic on the back that holds the sensors.
Yeah.
And I like how their marketing photos, like scroll down, look at the marketing photos.
They cleverly hide
the black, like giant wart on the back.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do the 360 view, put it full profile. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. I take it back.
Oh, wow.
Like, this thing's like really thin and sexy.
That is very well hidden. Yeah. It's a chunky boy. But I mean,
yeah.
Apple Watch isn't the thinnest, although it's a little
thin. No. But I mean, they're probably ultimately the same thickness, but with how they taper it and how they put their marketing.
Yeah, but I have, to be fair, I've seen a lot of these. I've seen a lot of these.
The Fitbit ones, yeah.
Fitbits out in the wild. Yeah,
Popular.
So anyway, Apple shipped 9.2 million watches in Q4, which is up from 7.8 a year ago. So they're growing. Global smartwatch sales are up 56% year over year. And like I said, Apple's still in first place. However, Apple's global smartwatch market share has slipped to 51% in Q4, which is down from 67%. It looks like they're losing market share to Samsung and Fitbit, which, you know, that makes sense. The Samsung part, not so much. I see a lot of the Fitbits.
Yep.
But yeah.
Apple Watch by far is the one I see most commonly.
Yeah, and it makes sense. It seems to also be more popular.
I don't know. I mean, again, this is just like looking around and seeing who has what. But if I were to guess, I would think it's almost more popular with women, which is interesting. And maybe that's a testament to what you were saying, Jeff, that they make a smaller version.
Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer to me for all the other companies. But... they're all just the big ones.
So I think Apple's going to have the same problem with Apple Watch that they have with the iPhone, though, that the Apple Watch is just a darn good product. And for example, like I have a Series 2 and I'm not even sure I'll upgrade to a Series, 5 this year.
When do they come out? Is it in fall or spring? Or summer?
They usually come out in the fall.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know when I'm going to... I think you're right. I'm not super sure when I want to get a new watch. I'm at Series 1, but...
Yeah, mine's great, and it does everything I need it to do, and I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything.
I definitely feel like I'm missing
out. It'd be nice to have the GPS and some of those other features, but I'm not dying for them.
Series 1 is long in the tooth, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you're still rocking your Series 1 this fall, it might be time to look at whatever comes out.
Yeah, for sure.
If they made it thinner or... like, I don't even feel like I need longer battery life. I know that's like a big thing for a lot of people.
I definitely need longer battery life. I can't...
Oh, yeah, from a Series 1.
I can't get through the day.
Yeah. That I believe.
I mean, it's old on top of being a Series 1, so.
My Series 2, depending upon how I'm using it, can go 1 to 2 days. Like, I've worn it overnight sometimes and made it through the better part of the next day.
Dude, that's nice. I'd like to be able to crash somewhere and not have to worry about my watch dying, because that is a weird thing to bring with you. You know what I mean?
It'll be nice when you could wirelessly charge it with your iPhone.
That would be great.
Yeah, maybe this fall.
Yeah, that's the plan, right?
So I charge my phone while I charge my watch?
Well, you know, they're going to have the two-way
wireless charging. I know, but I'll plug in my phone.
Right.
And then your phone can be a wireless charger. Phone.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. That would be cool.
Just a little piggyback.
Yes. Okay. Let's talk about some foldable smartphones. So, was it last week? I think Samsung unveiled the Galaxy Fold. For almost $2,000, $1,980, mm-hmm. And it seems a little clunky. Obviously, it's expensive, but it's cool, right? Huawei has just unveiled this past week their foldable smartphone called the Mate X, or Mate, is it Mate 10? I'm guessing it's Mate 10. And it's bigger. So it's got a 6.6-inch OLED smartphone screen, which transforms into an 8-inch OLED tablet. Obviously, it's larger than Samsung's.
Actually thinner, though, right?
Is it thinner than Samsung's as well?
Yeah, like when it's folded up, it's actually a more svelte design.
Yeah, honestly, the design, it seems like much better. This seems like the 1.0. It makes the Samsung look like a beta.
That's no surprise. It also costs a lot more.
Different philosophies, yeah.
Did I mention it's $2,600?
No.
Okay. Yeah, it's $2,600. It was very expensive, but very
and
cool.
You can't hold it without mucking up the screen.
Well, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Adam, you can't have everything.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very different philosophies, right? The Samsung folds in, and although it has like a secondary screen on one of the outside sides, they still have, you know, it's still in phone factor, more like a traditional phone.
Yeah. Right?
And then it folds out into a tablet, and they kind of have a hinge. And Samsung's arguing like they have a design that would work better for like cases and things like that. You know, whereas the Huawei one, obviously you can't put a case on it because you'd be covering the screen.
Can you put a case on the Samsung? I don't know.
Sure. It has a hinge. It just has a hinge on the back.
I guess
right?
You're right.
Your case would be like two separate pieces.
Yeah. Right?
Well, I guess it would just be a back plate, really, right?
Yikes.
Oh yeah, I guess
like
so.
a regular phone case.
I would imagine the
iPhone only has a case on the back.
I'd imagine the cover on this thing is the cover glass, quote unquote, is probably more durable. Given that it can bend.
Still glass. Or no, it's not glass, right? It's plastic. It has to be plastic, right?
It's not glass.
It's not really glass, right?
It can't be glass. It's something else.
Polymer.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's, yes, polymer. Some weird polymer thing that they're doing.
I didn't even think about that, but yeah. But
don't drop it, man, because it doesn't matter what angle it hits at. That angle will always be the worst.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, so maybe it's more, you know, stronger in terms of, like, droppage, because you probably are dealing with a polymer, so it's likely not going to shatter. I'm sure it'll probably scratch.
Yeah. So as far as I know, nobody's been able to touch the Samsung phone. Same goes for the Huawei. But they have shown some videos of it. There's a little bit of a crease kind of situation happening when they go between fold and unfold. I don't know if that's like a temporary deal. but what I kind
of... Like a warping of the pixels or a distortion?
I don't know if it's the pixels or the cover.
It looks more like the cover to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine it's probably the covering. I like the Huawei design because, you know, you have you get the added benefit of the screen on the back, right? So, you know, they show like being able to take selfies with a good camera.
Right.
Because your good camera's on the back. That's obviously one. I don't know what other uses you'd have for that, but I think it's interesting.
And why aren't more people talking about Samsung's side notch?
The side notch?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's not centered.
Yeah, when it's in the tablet form factor, they've got a giant side notch.
That is weird. Probably because nobody can afford it, so they don't care. But yeah, I mean, like I said, it makes the Huawei makes the Samsung look like a beta. And I don't know how many people are actually going to buy it. I would love to see one in the wild eventually. I'm sure we will.
It'll probably sell like the gold Apple Watch did.
Right. The Huawei
sell comes to early adopters and people who are really into tech. I mean, Woz has come out and said like, oh, Apple needs to do one of these because I want one, basically.
Because he's like contractually obligated to only buy Apple products.
No, he hardly buys Apple products anymore, I don't think, because he often feels like Apple is behind in the technology and Woz is an early adopter of stuff.
That's true. That makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
Both sides of that make sense, to be honest.
That's the place. I mean, but again, that's the place he's coming from. And in my opinion, that's what this is all about, right? This is just the classic Samsung and Huawei and all these companies are just going to make it because they can. And it's really cool. And they, you know, they're going to throw it out in the marketplace and then see what the marketplace can figure out why they want it or why they're going to use it or why it's cool or. Whereas Apple's always the opposite approach. It's like, well, we'll do it when it makes sense. Like, yeah, the technology is cool, but we need a legitimate use case that makes sense for this thing beyond, oh, I've got a phone and a tablet in one. I guess that's the obvious one, right?
Yeah.
Right. And this way they let Samsung and everyone else do the market research for them.
Right. I think the price point that these guys have put it at, too, also just proves like this is just an early adopter phone. They're not looking to sell a ton of these things. And I think there's still a lot of technical questions, too, in terms of like durability and longevity. And like I have a feeling you're going to hear about, you know, these things snapping in half, these things getting warping at the hinges. Like I know they have done a crud ton of R&D and lab testing, I'm sure. But, you know, real world testing is always different.
Yeah, I I'm with you. I think we're going to see a lot of surprises and potentially unhappy people when 6 months into their new bendable phone.
Right, their $2,600 bendable phone.
Yeah, it's the screen is cracking on the hinge. Or pixels are dead or something.
I would imagine they've done a lot of testing on this thing.
Yeah, again, lab tests never seem to 100% match what happens in the real world. I mean, as much as they try.
Sure.
I mean, how many times has Apple learned this?
Like, that's true.
We want to bring up all the gates.
How many gates do we have?
Bend gate, antenna gate. What else we have? Another bend gate.
Yeah.
Battery gate.
Battery gate.
Classic. Yeah. So they're cool. I want to see where this takes us. Obviously they're expensive, but we'll see.
Well, so let me ask you guys, because this, I asked my community this too, because again, beyond the, okay, cool, I have a phone thing and I have a tablet thing and it's all in one. So I get extra screen real estate. And you know, if the operating system is done well enough and it folds around, I think these things leave way more questions than they do answers in terms of like that concept is great, but it requires a huge amount of software thought and execution to make it work. And if they can't get developers on board for this, and why would you? Like, if I'm a software developer, right? If I'm making an app, I now have to build a custom version for the Samsung Fold. I have to build a custom version for the Huawei thing and whoever else might come out with a foldable because they're all different resolutions. They're all going to operate differently. Like, I think they have a huge app marketplace problem.
Like the same problem that we had with just multiple sizes of phones, though. And we sorted through that.
But amplified, right?
Of course, yeah, but we sorted through that.
Because not only does it have to adapt for different devices, it now has to adapt for different operating systems and different fold directions and different, like...
Yeah, different configurations on a single phone.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, this is not the question to ask, Adam. I thought you were going to ask something else. I thought you were going to ask... If you had the ability to, you know, have a phone, your iPhone turns into an iPad mini,
right?
Would you do it? And I think the answer is yes. I would kind of prefer something. Yeah, I would. Heck yeah.
I want an iPad mini that folds out into a full size iPad.
Yeah. See, that's the issue, though. The iPad mini for me is kind of too small.
And see, the iPad mini for me is great for a lot of the uses that I have, but then it's too small for some other things. So then there's the regular size iPad. It's okay. I think the big reason why I really want this in an iPad form factor is because I'm still totally crushing on the Knowledge Navigator. I have wanted Knowledge Navigator since we first started seeing that video back in the 80s. And if you put a foldable screen on an iPad, that's like the modern version of Knowledge Navigator.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely going to change the industry. I do.
Again, I think there has to be the use case. The one thing is, a lot of people are talking about, you know, these guys being the early leaders. But I think people are forgetting that if Apple does figure this out, and there's every indication that they are working on or messing around with foldable displays and prototypes and things like that. The advantage that Apple has, right, is their control of the ecosystem. So those things that I was talking about, where it's like figuring out the challenges of, you know, how do you transition from folded to unfolded, and what experiences can you create around that? Apple has the much better ability to kind of control that in their environment, and also create a controlled environment that developers can program into.
Yeah.
Like, the openness of the Android platforms, you know, are going to be a challenge. And I'm pretty sure the Samsung one is using, what is Samsung's operating system? Like, it's like the tweaked version of, is it tweaked version of Android, or they do their own thing?
They have their own thing, and they also use Android. It just depends on the device.
Yeah, I didn't check on this foldable. I just made the assumption on the Galaxy Fold that they were doing their own thing, so that exactly that, they control the UI experience, right?
I could see them doing that. I could also see them saying, here, we just threw Android on it. You guys figure it out.
Oh, it is running Android Pi.
There you go.
So take it back. Yeah, but again, that, to me, that's even more challenging, right?
Well, yeah, because now we're back to what you said earlier about everything is just a mess with trying to figure out sizes and configurations, and where is it going to fold, and yeah.
Right, and I think that's why they've shown a very few, like, demo apps that do the transitioning thing. And so what remains a question in my mind is, how much time are developers going to be willing to spend on these early adopter phones to actually create apps that create a good user experience for that these form factors? And the answer that I keep coming back with is probably not very much. I mean, there'll be those few companies that are maybe larger that are like, yeah, I'm going to go for it, or maybe a few indies that are like, I'm going to try this because it's interesting and I want to experiment with it. But outside of that, like, you know, is Twitter going to make a special version of a Twitter client for this, or, you know, Instagram maybe, because they're big enough and they have big enough budgets, but I don't know. Discord, Slack.
I can see it happening. It's going to take a while. It's going to be growing pains, but
yeah, I'm totally indifferent. You know, I think these things are coming. I think, again, they're way early at this point, and it's Samsung and Huawei and those companies just playing around with the stuff. And I mean, I think we're 3 to 5 years from seeing it as a serious technology.
Absolutely. But yeah, this is the precursor for sure. And of course, Apple is working on developing this technology. They have a lot of patents that go out relating to foldable displays. A patent application that they that was published recently refers to smartphone displays that could be that they may be prone to damage when bent in cold temperatures. And so one of their solutions to that would be either heating that portion of the fold with the actual pixels by lighting up the pixels, or even having a heating element. So that's, yep. I mean, one of the things that you see in those videos with the Huawei phone, like we said, is the distortion of the cover material. That's one of those things that I think Apple is going to want to have figured out before they do anything with this.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And
guess what the L in LCD stands for?
Lick something.
Yeah. And liquids have this tendency to, you know, get brittle or more solid in cold enough temperatures.
Well, they're OLED mm-hmm. though. But I guess,
okay.
Yeah.
It's still.
Yeah.
Oh, the light emitting diodes, right? So they're not really liquid anymore.
Yeah.
Not liquid crystal.
Yeah.
So I take it back.
Yes. Which is why they can bend.
You're right.
What else? Samsung, they're actually offering their foldable displays to Apple and Google, as it turns out. Makes sense. You've got your Samsung, you know, phone division, but you also have your Samsung display division. And so they made a set of foldable displays for delivery to Apple. And I believe they were 7.2-inch panels, about the same size as the Galaxy Fold. Samsung is currently expected to produce 2.4 million of these foldable displays this year, but they're hoping to scale up to 10 million. So they're going to be sharing this technology, which obviously, you know, could help Apple quite a bit. And I would imagine Apple would develop with Samsung, if they went with Samsung, to make something that works better.
Yeah, I thought that was a little weird that some analysts were worried that Samsung could hold the tech back from Apple. But I think they forget that, you know, Samsung is also a display company, and they probably would like to sell as many of these displays as they possibly can, which means they need customers.
And if you're looking for a customer that's going to buy a crap ton, that would be Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not going to hold this technology back from Apple. Just like they haven't held back any of the other technologies they make that Apple wants.
I mean, they might try to jack the price on them or not give them as good concessions if they can get away with it. But I mean, beyond that, it's like Apple's going to have no trouble getting foldable displays if they want them.
No, people will line up to sell them the displays. That won't be a problem.
And again, I don't think this is going to be a immediate driver of smartphone sales either. That's the other side of it. Like, I don't think like consumers, other than again early adopters, are going to be rushing out for this tech at the price that it's at right now.
Yeah, I could see Apple using this tech in a less obvious manner. You know how they have the iPhone X actually has foldable. A folded OLED display so that you get.
Yeah, that's true. The edges are bent.
Yeah. So there are interesting uses before we get to full foldy boys. But I want an accordion. I want this thing to be iPhone X to like full 10.5-inch iPad.
Like a 1980s map?
Yeah. Yes. That would be great. I would love that.
Hold on. I can't remember how to fold my iPad back up. So I folded it a different way, and now I have three black lines across the screen.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a break, talk about our sponsors, and when we come back, we'll talk about Jeff Williams and how he's aware that Apple stuff is expensive. Our first sponsor is SimpliSafe at simplisafe.com/Tyos. Protecting your home with a security system might seem like a hassle, bringing someone in to install an outdated, clunky security system that requires a phone line is hard to make a priority. You need home security for the modern age. With a system you can customize and set up yourself, it should use cell networks and built-in batteries for backup, and it definitely needs to sync with your phone. That's why I recommend SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe believes fear has no place in your home, so they made their system ridiculously smart. SimpliSafe's sensors will protect every point of access to your home, doors, windows, garage, you name it. If a burglar even tries to break in, an ear-shattering siren will let them know the police are already on the way. Best of all, SimpliSafe's 24/7 monitoring is just $14.99 per month, and they'll never lock you into a long-term contract. More than 3 million people already know it feels good to fear less with SimpliSafe. So go with the only home security system I trust, SimpliSafe, by going to simplisafe.com/Tyos. Go today and get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. That's simplisafe.com/Tyos for the home security I trust, simplisafe.com/Tyos. We thank them so much for their support of the iOS show. Okay, so during a speaking engagement at Elon University, a student asked Jeff Williams if Apple had any plans to reduce prices, considering the seemingly large margins on Apple products outlined by analyst reports. Williams responded, "Analysts don't really understand the cost of what we do and how much care we put into making our products. For example, to build Apple Watch, the activity monitor, Apple built a physiology lab with 40 nurses and 10,000 participants."
That's a big investment.
Yeah, right, that's a pretty big investment. And I'm very happy about that. You know, the Apple Watch does a lot of great stuff for me. I'm, you know, obviously I've gotten much more into tracking my health and exercise with my Apple Watch. I've been very happy with that. It's helped me improve my health, and I'm okay paying the premium. I was okay paying the premium on my Apple Watch even before I started doing that. There are obvious other benefits with Apple products. However, he did say that he did go on to say that it's something the high price, or at least perceived high price, is something they're very aware of. They don't want to be an elitist company. He says, we want to be an egalitarian company, and we've got a lot of work going on in developing markets. So the developing, so I don't know that that really says anything about the United States.
Even in developing markets though, I mean, Apple just is not, I get that he's going to say that from a sort of, hey, we want everybody to feel good about this stuff. But I mean, the reality is like Apple is going to have a hard time becoming an egalitarian, you know, company. Like their stuff is just set up to be premium and pricey. And like, we're not going to see $100 iPhones even in emerging markets anytime soon.
No, sorry. We don't even see the low end stuff. Like price points, low end price point stuff that they made for a while. Like you can't buy an iPod Shuffle or an iPod Nano anymore.
I mean, I guess the way they are reaching out to those markets, right, is they're using old tech in those markets to try and, you know, like the fact that you can still get, what is it, an SE in India?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Really?
I think so. Yeah. I think they make, or a 6S, like they make certain models only in certain markets, and that's how they're kind of getting around it.
But, it's kind of, I mean, yeah, it's
there,
kind of dumb.
Even there, it's not, they're not, would not be considered in those markets, you know, low end priced devices. I think they're still mid tier. So, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with Apple just saying, look, we're a premium brand, we're a premium company, this is the place we operate in. We like profits. Like, I don't think they should be making apologies for that or worrying about it, because there are other companies that serve those other segments. And I guess it's only a problem if internally at Apple they decide they are missing out on those markets and want to compete in them.
But, well, I think that the big concern here that people have is that Apple charges more than the value they provide.
Again, in a free market, isn't it up to the consumers to decide if they want to pay for that or not? Like, if you don't, like, why does Apple have an obligation? I never understood why Apple would have an obligation or a responsibility to address that.
I think it's because they have in the past and still currently now, at least out of the mouth of Jeff Williams, they want to be an egalitarian company.
I don't buy it. Then behave like that.
Yeah, they're not behaving like it. And yeah, and in so, the 2000s,
I'm
in the
saying
2000s,
he's giving lip
Adam,
service to that kid in that speech. I'm sorry.
In well, they shouldn't. He shouldn't be doing that. But I mean,
I know. I agree. Apple I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
Apple positioned itself that way in the 2000s, and a little bit later. You know, you've got the back. What is it? The one with John Hodgman. Those ads.
Right.
And oh, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC.
I'm a Mac, I'm a PC, think different. You know, all the stuff that went on early on when Apple was trying to gain traction, you know, they really set themselves up long term.
Yeah, but they also sold a $400 Mac.
Yeah, but they don't. It's now $800.
Not anymore,
it's kind
yeah,
of a
right?
Piece of crap.
Well, they don't even sell a $400 Mac.
Well, the $800 Mac Mini that I'm talking about, that's
exactly.
The cheapest Mac Mini you can get is $800, and it's kind of garbagey.
Why do you? No way. That I don't agree with. I will argue that one.
It is sure. Some of the decisions they decided to go with and hardware-wise don't make sense.
You're talking about the current Mac Mini,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not the 2014 one.
Yeah. $800 i3 computer.
Yeah.
That seems kind of crazy.
It's not the computer for me. That said, I imagine for some people, they look at the whole package and they think, all right, that's a good price for what I want.
It's the lowest cost Mac. So if you really want to get Mac OS, it's the only option, but it's expensive. It's the most expensive. Well, it's the cheapest. It's the least worst option.
The least worst option. Least worst. Yeah. And I'm not defending the price point, because it's not the right computer for me.
Right. No, I mean, it probably wouldn't be the thing I would choose either. I mean, honestly, if I were picking at close to that price point, I'd go with the 21.5-inch iMac. 4K iMac, right?
Yeah, that seems like a nice all-around package at a reasonable price to me.
Yeah, so $1,100. And that comes with an i5. That's a good computer. What the heck are they doing with the Mac
that's like
Mini? I don't understand.
Really nice display, and they throw the computer in for free.
The problem is Apple's pricing with flash storage with SSDs. That's where they're screwing up, in my opinion. Like, I get that they're using higher quality SSDs and they're maintaining this certain level of performance and blah 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 blah, but the average consumer doesn't care about that. And so they're sticking in these expensive SSDs and charging for it, and that's where the prices increases are coming from, mostly, in my opinion.
Yeah, well,
like if that Mac Mini had a Fusion drive in it, it could still be in that $400, $500 price range.
You think that's what it is?
I know that's what it is. I mean, I know that's part of what it is.
Hmm.
Yeah, they're doing custom stuff with their SSDs.
Yeah, the SSDs are weird. And you can't even, it's tied to the board, right?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can yeah, you pull
they,
them
if
out?
They if they were using stock off the shelf SSD like in a standard what do I want to say ATA slot you uh-huh. know hard drive
yeah,
slot
yeah, yeah.
right it wouldn't be this pricey. Or yeah. wouldn't have to be this pricey.
Yeah, this is.
It wouldn't be as performant.
Okay.
But again, at that level of a product, I don't think the consumers care that much. Like, I think they'd rather have the $400 back.
Yeah.
But that's not how Apple does things. And so my only argument is, like, I don't think Apple should have to apologize for their choices or justify their choices. And I think it's okay to say, this is what we make. This is what we offer. If you don't like it, there's plenty of other stuff on the market you can buy.
I think it's a weird decision. I think that is my issue, is that it's an ill-formed, ill-conceived way to go with the Mac Mini. Well, because it doesn't make sense
to offer an economy car.
Sorry, what?
Does BMW need to offer an economy car?
No, they don't. But here's the thing. Apple is pretending they're offering an economy car, but they're not. And it's a weird mixed signal issue.
Are they pretending they're offering an economy car, though?
What the hell is a Mac Mini, then? Like, I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense. It
Where was conceived in their marketing to be the $500. This is the inexpensive option.
Everything about it implies that it's the inexpensive option.
Now they,
and it was they, and it was founded to be the inexpensive.
It was. Office. It's not anymore. I agree with you that when it first came out,
it's mixed signals. It's weird as hell. They should have rebranded if that's what they were going to do. What even is the Mac Mini? It's a Mac that is separate from a display.
It is a small, but it's powerhouse
but it's
computer.
Not the Mac Pro, because the Mac Pro is some weird thing that we forgot about. It
Apple's
doesn't make any sense.
Marketing is calling it an all-in-one workhorse computer.
So no, but it's not. It's an i3.
It to like the Mac block.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any freaking sense. It's stupid.
So let's see. They're marketing it for build and render farms, Xcode servers, live performance, and digital art and signage. According to their website.
So they should have renamed it then.
Yeah. To the Mac Pro Mini. But it's not even a Pro. They shouldn't have a Pro in there. It's not. No. At least it, does, at least
no,
it doesn't say Pro.
They should not have the Pro moniker.
At least
in
there. It doesn't say Pro. I would have exploded. Yeah, I guess you're right. Build and render farms, Xcode servers, live performance, digital art signage. So it's an expensive Windows embedded box. Anyway, ooh, you can play Rise of the Tomb Raider on it with its crappy graphics. All right, let's get off this. People don't want to.
No,
hear
I just think play. I think what they realized was that entry level consumers weren't buying Mac Minis, and that's true. I mean, it got to the point where that wasn't the market for it anymore. The people who I knew who were buying them were like headless and stuff.
You're right. The BYODKM thing doesn't work. People don't do that. They want a full solution, and that's what the iMac is for. And the iMac has honestly always kept up and been a great computer and always been a great solution.
Exactly. That or a MacBook Air or a MacBook.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the EFF.
EFF.
Yes. The Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Panties in a bunch.
They're angry. Yeah, their panties are in a twist, and they want people to fix it already. And so they have a new campaign called Fix It Already, with the aim of getting technology companies to implement new privacy features in areas where privacy is lacking. For example, Android. They want them to, let's talk about Apple first. Because this is not targeted just at Apple, but this is why we're talking about it, obviously. So it's regarding iCloud backups and encryption. Yep. The way it works right now, iCloud content is encrypted only after it reaches the server, and therefore can be decrypted by Apple with proper legal requests, which is something they don't want to be allowed. And iCloud backups themselves are not encrypted. Apple states that this is because doing so would prevent users prevent Apple from being able to restore iCloud backups for users who have forgotten their passwords, which is kind of bonkers.
No, it's actually true.
No, I buy that being the reason. I think it's a terrible reason.
It's not from, again, it's okay. Terrible from us. It depends on your perspective,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
if you're a security researcher, it's horrible.
If you're your mom, then yes. It's like, why would Apple do this? Why would they encrypt it? Because I want my stuff.
I can tell you the number of calls they get from people who are like, I want my stuff back. And if they were to start telling those people, well, we can't get your stuff back.
Because you forgot your password. Maybe they would learn to remember their damn password, Mom.
But I agree with the EFF. Like, it should be an option. I mean, I should be able to, just like I can with a lot of other services, say, all right, I want to generate the keys on my end and I want to keep control of those keys. And, you know, this can be handled with a simple toggle or a simple, you know, option. It doesn't have to be one way or the other.
Yeah, and they don't even have to make it an immediately obvious option. It could be something like you go into your advanced settings for your iCloud account.
Yeah.
Yep. No, it's a legit. I mean, EFS has a legit point here. Like, security privacy could be better. I guess that we're not talking as much about security because that would imply that what Apple is doing is not secure. It's potentially able to supersede your privacy, right? Apple can be compelled to give this stuff up to information request from the government or a subpoena or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts Apple in. And I think Apple would like to be out of it too, because it does kind of put them in the middle of that stuff anyway. I think they would much prefer not to be in the middle of it.
Yeah, it sure looks like Apple is not interested in being the babysitter of our data.
Why would anybody want to be? I mean, that's the thing. It's just like,
well, if we're the product and you want to sell everything you can about us.
Right. No, I get that part.
But Facebook.
You get my point. It's just like,
yeah,
it's much easier to say to the government, hey, well, sorry, we can't help you. You got to go to Jeff. Go deal with Jeff. His thing.
Yeah.
We're out of it.
Great. Now all the security researchers that work for the government, whenever they need to get into Michael's data, thanks to Adam, they would now come to me. Well, yeah. Adam said, go to Jeff.
Yep. He has the access. He has Michael's
password. I need your passwords, Michael.
Okay.
I mean, cool. And they are kind of halfway there on a lot of this stuff too. You know, some of it's encrypted end to end. Anything that's encrypted end to end is not in iCloud. So that's things like your Siri search stuff, I think. Trying to remember all the little
iMessage,
your keychain.
iMessage, but I believe your message, your keychain is not, but your messages.
Depends on how you use. If you use iCloud backup, then your key is in your iCloud backup is the problem for your messages in the cloud.
Yeah.
If you use messages in the cloud and don't use iCloud backup, then the key stays on your device.
Man, how's the average user ever going to wrap their head around that?
It's clearly, I did it because it's clearly listed in Apple's privacy page.
Yes, but you're not the average user.
iCloud. Yeah, but I mean, it is in a support article and it's not. It's in pretty clear English. Like, if you read it, it's straightforward. I don't think it's totally confusing.
We could talk to my mom about it.
Yeah, let's get your mom on the show. Let's find out.
I'm sure she would love to.
And I know you said that half in jest, but it's a totally valid point.
Here's the more valid point. Does your mom give a patoot?
Yeah, that's it right there. And odds
about
are she
security?
Doesn't. And your mom's the average user.
She says that she cares about security, but if I tell her, you know, or if we set up the security things that she wants to have, and then, you know, a month later she goes, I forgot my password for blah, blah, blah. And I say, well, good. All your stuff's gone. She'll go, well, that's stupid. Why would it be that way? And I would tell her, because you wanted it that way. And she would say, I don't like that.
Right.
Yeah. And then right. the next then, thing, you know, there's a lawsuit, class action lawsuit. Everyone's suing Apple because Apple locked me out of my data just because I couldn't remember my password.
So, again, I think this is the kind of thing where it's like, yes, this is important to talk about. It's important for people to know. I think most consumers don't, and it's a separate argument. I don't want to get into the argument of, like, should consumers feel stronger about their privacy, because, like, that's a whole another can of worms. But the reality is like, most of them don't. And most of them, if you asked them and gave them the choice and said, look, we can set up all the security and privacy, but here's the potential downside. You won't be able to get your data back if you forget your password, or you can have it the other way and Apple will have potential access to your data. It could be subpoenaed by the government, blah, blah, blah. But if you forget your password, you can get your data back. I can almost guarantee you the larger percentage is going to choose option B versus A. Whether that's right or wrong, I think that's, you know, somewhat wrong. It's being cavalier about your privacy, fine, but that's just how people are.
Yeah, I think you're right. People will choose convenience over privacy.
It's also why people don't care what Google does or what Facebook does with all their data. Even in light of all the data breaches and all this other stuff, people just go, oh, well.
Yeah, well,
don't care.
Yeah, people don't, they don't get it. And a lot of people think, well, I don't have anything to hide.
Right.
And to me, that's okay. Here we go. The people that are sitting there saying, I don't have anything to hide, they're the same people that if I said, okay, let's say the police just showed up at your door, came in without your permission, walked into your bedroom, opened up your dresser, and started going through all your underpants. Are you okay with that? Well, no.
Right.
But you don't have anything to hide.
Right. Yep.
All right.
And once again, I worked underpants into a show. Go me.
Awesome. Yeah. But the EFF, I mean, getting back to the story, I think the EFF has a point. And I do think that for these options should be available. So for those people who do care, and there are a lot of people who care, I don't mean to imply that there aren't, that the people who care do have the choice to say, look, I really care about my privacy. I want these options. But I also do think those people, too, would at this point not be using iCloud, right? They would just say, well, forget that. It's not secure enough for me. And they'd find alternatives.
Did you check out the other stuff on the EFF's list? It's pretty awesome. Verizon should stop pre-installing spyware on its users' phones.
Oh, yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's hard. Yeah, they had a bunch of other stuff for Android. Should let users deny and revoke apps' internet permissions, Twitter and direct messages, Facebook stop using phone numbers provided for account creation for targeted advertising. Yikes. WhatsApp, obtain user consent before adding users to groups. Slack, give free workspace admins control over data retention.
If you use free Slack, you can't, I think you can't control how long you're, like, they have your data as long as you want, as they want. Like, you can't go expunge old data from Slack.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I just learned something new. I had it in my mind that with the free version, when your data hits that overload point, they just wipe it out.
Yeah, no, I think you just don't have access to it, which is the problem, right?
Sweet.
So they have it, but you can't go in and delete it or remove it or manage it in any way.
Oh, my God. So if you decided...
I mean, okay. Maybe they delete it. We don't know. I guess I don't know.
We don't know.
Right.
I bet they don't, because it just occurred to me the wording in Slack when stuff drops off your channel, because...
I think you can get it back if you pay, right?
You get it back if you pay. So, of course, they're holding on to it.
Holy crap.
So if you really want to get rid of it, you'd have to pay for an account so that you could go and get rid of it, assuming that's more than just removing it from your feed.
Yeah, I have to imagine that might even have to change, though, with GDPR and all that stuff now. Right. So,
yeah, probably, but
because if you submitted a GDPR request to say you need to delete this, they're required to delete it.
Except for us, because we're not in the EU,
right?
And pretty soon, our UK friends too.
True.
Okay,
this is such a happy show today.
Yeah.
Do we have any fun things in the notes?
Nope. We're at the end.
Maybe our picks will be fun.
I usually put something fun at the end, but I don't have anything. So yeah, let's just do our picks. What do you got, Jeff? I have a fun one. Dragon 2 docked to the space station this morning.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, that looked so cool. It was like we were watching the future.
Yeah, we were finally given the future we were promised in the 1970s.
You mean the Russians don't have to take us up there anymore?
So the way it works...
for a little while.
The way it works is Dragon 2, the crew capsule, the crew capable from SpaceX, made it to the space station. They're going to have to do an in-flight abort in another flight, and then after that, if that's successful, then they can start flying crew. I think they're targeting July, but that seems crazy.
That seems.
You think it'll happen this year?
Yeah, I think it'll happen this year.
Finally, don't have to bum rides with the Russians.
And their ship looks pretty cool.
Their ship looks great. It's so cool.
It doesn't look like it was built in the 1960s.
Some of the. I don't know if you saw the video of it. Coming in on final approach to the station, that those images didn't look real. They looked like renders.
They did. Yeah. I saw several of the stills, and my first thought was that they were CG renders. So we would know what it would look like if we could watch, but no, that was the real thing.
Yeah. It's incredible.
It's fracking awesome.
Yeah. All right.
Cool.
Pick, Jeff, go.
Peek. Okay. So my pick, I'm going with fun, and we'll throw the sci-fi into it also. I've been a big fan of the TV series, The Expanse.
Oh, yeah.
So I decided to go back and read the books that it's based on.
Oh, cool.
So my pick, available on the iBook store, Leviathan Wakes. It's the first book in that series. And it's really well done. I finished reading it on my flight out to Chicago this last week, and enjoyed it so much that I ended up buying the second book in the series to start on the way home, which is Caliban's War.
Nice.
So $9.99 on the iBook store. And it's, I thought it was a really fun read. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I read it too. I haven't finished Caliban's War yet. I still am working on working through the third season.
So am I.
When do we get the fourth?
It's been in production, I thought.
Good.
So I don't know. Hopefully soon.
All right. Adam, what is your pick?
I am going to pick something that is old because I picked it up again and started playing with it and was like, oh, man, this thing was actually kind of awesome. And I don't know why I stopped playing because it's a great little casual game for when you're waiting in line, when you just have a little bit extra time. And it is Stagehand, the reverse platformer. Basically, if you're used to side-scrolling platform games, right, the way it typically works is you have a character and you run them through the levels and you jump and you grab coins and you do things like that. The way this one works is you fire it up, it's got 8-bit style graphics, and your character just starts running and you have to manipulate the terrain so that they can keep running And the more you get stuck or more obstacles that are in your way, it'll push you closer to the edge of the screen, and you're trying to avoid getting squished into the edge of the screen. So that's the simple part of it.
Fun.
Yeah, it was developed by Cavil Sasser over at Panic. And it is super fun. It's $1.99, quick little easy game, and I love it. It's really cool. And I was like, oh man, this thing is fun. Super challenging. I'm not very good at it yet, but I plan to try and get a little better. So it's kind of like a little bit of an Endless Runner meets side scrolling platformer. And it's great. So Stagehand.
This was done by the people that did The Incident, which, as I recall, was another one that you picked and then I bought and was totally hooked on for a while.
Yeah, and also Space Age.
Oh, yeah. I never finished that.
So I revisited it and I'm like, oh, this actually was really cool.
Oh, this looks good. Oh. I love the artwork in it. Stage Hand.
Yeah, how much, and it's only $1.99.
$1.99. All right.
There's no in-app purchase, none of that garbage. Just buy it and play. Like I said, it's really quick and it's super challenging. So each game, like each one of my games, only probably lasts like 30 seconds to a minute. But
sweet,
you just keep playing.
All right,
see how far you can get.
I'll get it. So my pick this week is, I'm going to call it the Monoprice Mega Dongle.
The jokes write themselves.
Yes. So it is a USB-C to HDMI, 4K HDMI, VGA, two USB-A port, gigabit Ethernet, SD card, mini or regular SD and mini, or is it micro? Whatever the tiny one is. You got a USB-C data port, and delivers 100 watt power delivery with a folding USB-C type cable. So it's portable.
Wait, 100 watt?
Yes.
Oh my God. And we're still stuck at 40 from Apple?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I think I need to get this.
Yeah. So I got it on sale for like $50. It's right now it's $60. But like I said, it has everything, including 100 watt power delivery.
Okay, I'm on the Monoprice site. What's it called again?
I told you, Mega Dongle. Monoprice Mobile Series USB-C HDMI 4K at 30 hertz VGA 2-port USB 3.0 gigabit.
Jesus, just send me a love there.
You asked. That's why I said it's the Mega Dongle. Here you go. There's the link. Thank you. The link in the show notes. Honestly, it's a pretty big rectangle. And
oh, you sent me a link to this before. I remember now.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. This thing is really cool.
It's a rather large rectangle, but it's very portable because the cable does fold up underneath. It's very nice. And it'll do HDMI or VGA, which is great for literally every place that has a projector, because there's so many. I love how these companies buy these big brand new projectors that do like great resolution and everything, and they make you plug in with VGA.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. And then they have a VGA to like HDMI adapter.
Yeah.
And so it's like you're losing all benefit of this projector. And the thing that we run into oftentimes is anybody who has a Mac, if you have the HDMI port on your Mac, that does not send out an analog signal. It only does the HDMI digital signal. So if you go and plug into an HDMI to VGA adapter, you're not going to get anything. Same goes for if you have like a USB type C to HDMI adapter.
You know what's cool about this thing too?
What?
Bet you it might work with my iPad Pro.
Oh yeah, I bet it would.
I bet it totally does.
I bet you should try doing that. Do iPad Pros work with Ethernet adapters?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so you could probably do everything with this. Yeah, so this this will support VGA.
Oh, this is awesome.
So I haven't tried the USB Type-C data portion of it, but I assume that works. So yeah.
It's awesome.
It's good stuff.
Does it do pass? Oh yeah, it does pass through power because you just said it'll do 100 watt power delivery.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Oh, yeah.
I need one of these in my life.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. So with that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show, leave us some stars, all that good stuff. Send feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com. Our sponsor this week is SimpliSafe at simplisafe.com/Tios. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen's at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and at MacCast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Oh, hey, I'm ordering product. What are you doing?
Yes, good. Keep on with what you're doing. And Jeff Gamet, he's at Smile Software and at J Gamet on Twitter. And have you completed your order?
No, because I was trying to be professional for once, and I was waiting until we were done recording.
Yeah, I thought you realized this was not a professional show. So,
well, I do now.
Yeah, we just pretend to be professionals. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? We have to get them and put them away.